You're listening to Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. When you think of the Texas-Mexico border, you probably think about the desert, the border fence, immigration. But does art ever come to mind? Well, in today's debates about the border, you don't often hear about this, but the borderlands are a treasure trove of archaeological history. Along the Rio Grande, the river that separates Texas and Mexico, in hidden rock shelters under cliff overhangs, you can find hundreds of mysterious drawings of humans and animals. The area has one of the highest concentrations of archaic rock art in all of North America. Bet you didn't know that. But the people who painted them were not the tribes we think from the old westerns and history class. They lived in the area long before the Comanches or the Apaches ever came through. The art is not hundreds, but thousands of years old. And my next guest says this is some of the oldest religious art in North America, and archaeologists on both sides of the border are studying these sites to piece together who created the art and why. Let me introduce my guest. Dr. Salve Turpin is a retired archaeologist who has studied the rock art in the region for decades. She's the former director of the Borderlands Archaeological Research Unit at the University of Texas at Austin. She is author of the book, The Indigenous Art of Coahuila, about rock art in northern Mexico. She joins us here at the Whitty Museum in San Antonio, which has a terrific collection of the artwork in the museum. If you're coming to San Antonio, stop at the Whitty and take a look at it. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
I don't think people have ever heard about this outside of your work, you know?
Well, it's become more and better known over the years. About 20 years ago, we had a world conference here at the Whitty Museum, and people came from all over the world. And it provided the first exposure to the greater world.
Well, I was up at the Whitty on the second floor and invited everybody to go up there and take a look at it. And I'm looking at the artwork. And it's hard to, as a layperson, I can't describe it. So how would you describe what the artwork looks like?
Well, there's some various styles of artwork out there, which is one of our great boons, that we have a lot of rock art in a relatively contained area. And you can detect four prehistoric styles that are relatively stacked one upon each other. And then a historic one that comes after that, which is obvious because of the European, in fact, longhorns, to
is
get back
right?
to our subject.
The cattle show up.
Yes, yes. They had a great fascination with domestic animals, and so the longhorn was perpetuated on rock shelter walls.
And often I noticed in the early styles, they show a medicine man or a religious figure in there.
The focus of the earliest rock art, which we assume is between 3,000 to 4,000 years old, is a religious practitioner. And he's commonly called a shaman, and that's created great Sturm und Drang in the art world because there's arguments over whether it is or isn't. But for convenience sake, it's a central figure. He's endowed with animal attributes, and he's armed with weapons like spear throwers. He's in the process of becoming an animal or the animal acquiring animal attributes. And so he's an animistic figure.
Mm-hmm. And if some of these figures are on our website at sciencefriday.com if you'd like to take a look at them before you get to the Whitty. There's also what seems to be crucifix, but it's not, is it?
There? No, it's not. It's the ascending figure with his arms spread out in that classic pose that seems to denote a religious transformation in many religions outside of this. So when they're showing that, it's the human with his outspread arms.
Interesting. Because so when I looked through enough of them, some of those figures looked like they had fuzz on them, like they might be, what do you call the cacti that grow with the arms?
Prickly pears.
No, the cacti with the arms on them.
Oh, saguaros.
Saguaros, almost like that were incorporated into some of those figures. But
we don't have saguaro cacti.
Yeah,
I'm saying
it looks like it could have been.
Actually, what that fuzz probably is the fur that's showing the animal transformation, because the human is growing. He's got panther ears, he'll have a tail, wings, feathers, fangs, claws. It's just showing that he is in that mid-zone between human and animal.
And how has the art survived for all these thousands of years there?
Well, it's got a great deal to do with the climate and the fact that they paint them in dry rock shelters where they're sheltered by the curvature of the rock. But this is a pretty obvious statement, but limestone is porous. And when the water seeps down and comes to the surface and evaporates, it leaves a film. And that film covers the pigment, and so it's actually preserved behind a cloudy film of mineral.
Oh, so we don't see that. I don't see that.
You will in a cross-section. We've cross-sectioned pieces, and you can see.
Yeah. We have a gentleman in the audience. I'd like to
ask thank you. I'm Jay Brown. I live in Shiner, Texas, and I'm real interested in your topic. I'm wondering, have you found or are you aware of any other sites besides just the Trans-Pecos area, the Big Bend area? Is there anything like maybe in Central Texas or East Texas or North Texas, the rock art?
There's a few sites in Central Texas. Mm. There's hardly any in East Texas because the climate just isn't conducive to their preservation. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few in the Panhandle, but most of those are petroglyphs as opposed to paintings.
I see.
So there's a lot of rock art just outside the Lower Pecos. There's a great enclave out around El Paso that you may know, Waco Tanks, State Park.
Sure, right.
Well, thank you for that question.
Thank you.
Yeah, the ones that we're talking about on the Rio Grande, are these the same people, or are they different people who migrated in and out to create the drawings?
There are sequences done by different people, and that's what makes it such an interesting archaeological problem, because you can see the changes in worldview. The early people are very ornate and decorative and religious and ritualistic, and the ones that follow are much more mundane. They're showing everyday life. And so you see that the object of the art was different.
Right. Do we know what happened to these people?
We have some pretty good ideas. Yeah. If we look at a great climatic model that's been developed for the area, that there were movements of people in and out in front of different climatic waves.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to say they disappeared, as though all of a sudden these people just vanished.
Like the Anasazi. They just went somewhere. We don't know where they went.
But most of the time I think that as the climate became drier, they moved south into Mexico. And as it became more clement, they moved back north into Texas.
Very interesting. Yeah, we have open microphones here in the audience if you'd like to come up and share your views about the art. Maybe you've seen it. Are these sites open to the public?
There are some sites that are open. There's Seminole Canyon State Historical Park. The Rock Art Foundation, which is based here in San Antonio, takes tours to various sites out there. And the Texas Parks and Wildlife is just now acquiring a lot of land on the Devil's River that will be open for scheduled tours.
Hmm. And do we know how they actually painted the stuff? Because of it's pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah, we have got shells that they used as a little palette that are stained with paint. We know they ground mineral paints to make the pigments. They're made of hematite, limonite. Then we have brushes that have pigment on them that they use to apply it. Sometimes they figure painted. You can tell the designs in the finger painting. Other times they held it up and blew dry pigment around it to make a negative image.
No kidding.
So they had a lot of ways of painting.
But so they were having fun with this stuff.
It wasn't just
serious shaman stuff. Some of it was interesting, experimental stuff.
Well, I think it was an information system, not unlike radio or television or newspapers are today. So, it had an entertainment quality to it.
Any evidence that kids were doing any of this stuff?
No, I don't believe so. I think it was much more of a, even though some of it looks rather humorous to us, I don't think it was, they considered it funny.
Interesting. Yes, sir.
Hi, Christopher Brown, San Antonio. You mentioned about migratory patterns and possible relationships. I was wondering if we could take that a step further. Did these people associate or become or live at the same time as, say, Mayans and Aztecs or other Indian tribes in Mexico and Central and South America?
Well, they were definitely contemporaneous with the forerunners, of course, of it. But direct contact is probably not the answer to the similarities between the styles. I mean, people see similarities between the emphasis on perhaps a feline character, and that'll appear in Olmec art, and it'll appear in the art of Chavin in Peru, just like it appears on the Lower Pecos.
Okay.
But these are the outpourings of a basic religious system, and they don't necessarily mean that there was any kind of contact between the people.
Okay. Thank you.
And how widespread along the river?
It runs about 90 miles.
90 miles. Could there be other undiscovered places?
I don't think so. It's been pretty intensive on the north side of the river. On the south side of the river in Mexico, yes, there's hundreds of sites that haven't been recorded over there.
Because?
The terrain is extremely difficult. There aren't roads. You can't do your normal walk around looking for them. So most of what we know has been reported to us by cavers, ranchers, cowboys, people that have a familiarity with the land.
And I'm sure they're afraid to go to these places because of the violence in the regions there now.
Everything that we did that's reported, we did during a time when there was still easy access or relatively easy access. Research now has come to a complete halt. Nobody is brave enough or foolish enough
really
to go over there. So there is no work going on at all in the north of Mexico.
Wow. There's all this stuff waiting to be discovered that no one can get to.
Yes, and then there are difficulties, too, now with the homeland security approaches because you can't just go over there. You have to have a passport. For a Mexican student to come to the United States, they have to have a passport. So there's a lot of bureaucratic paperwork that's now put between it and the research itself.
It wasn't like the old days.
No, never is it?
No. Long pause. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Nancy from San Antonio, and I wish you would tell about how in more modern times, fast forwarding, a local photographer was hunting and discovered the rock art. And I was wondering if before that time, the rock art was known to anyone but the property owners.
Yes, it began actually being publicized in the 1930s. There was a super draftsperson, Forrest Kirkland, who took upon himself the task of recording all the rock art in Texas. And his work was published in increments and finally in a book by the University of Texas Press. And then there was another book in 1938 called The Rock Art or the Picture Writing of Texas Indians. So it's out there, but it didn't really hit the newsstand, so to speak,
Right. Until...
Forrest Kirkland and Bill Newcomb put out The Rock Art of Texas Indians, 1967. Mm-hmm.
As I say, you can see a slideshow of a lot of this artwork on our website at sciencefriday.com. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Dr. Salve Turpin, who is a retired archaeologist and author of The Indigenous Art of Coahuila. I'm pronouncing that correctly, mm-hmm. I hope. Because I never get any name right. You wouldn't be a guest if I got your name right here on this program. And it's rock art in northern Mexico. And it's quite interesting. Can you give us an idea what it's like to be an archaeologist out there? I hear stories of other archaeologists, and it's almost like you got to be nuts to go out into the Badlands here.
Well, yeah, you probably might say eccentric.
Okay, I'll give you eccentric. Okay.
It's a very liberating thing.
Liberating is another good word.
Yeah, there is very little contact with, quote, civilization, at least in those days, and you'd go camp out. So you had all the things that people like to do on vacation. Let's go camping at the park. That was what we did in our work. So we were having our vacation while we were working.
Mm-hmm. And is it basically on your back looking around, digging up? I mean, or do you have to open up caves, boulders, push them aside? How do you get into these
things? It's a lot of climbing.
Yeah?
An awful lot of climbing. Because that rock shelter will be up there and somebody will see it and say, oh, look over there, and you'll go, oh, no.
No, you look over there.
Yeah. You go up there and holler if there's anything.
And take the stick to get those mosquitoes or whatever out of
it. And some of the pictures that are on exhibit upstairs here in the Witte Museum were gotten in Mexico with tremendous burdens hauled up hills for Jim Zinkgraff, who was the Witte photographer at the time. And he loved old equipment, heavy old tripods.
None of this, take them with.
Yeah, and flash bulbs. And so all this would be in a pack and be carried up there so he could take his pictures.
I thought it was Ansel Adams. Yes, one quick question here.
Oh, hello. I was wondering when one group would leave and another group would come, would they, like, incorporate what was previously drawn and sort of add to it, or they just do away and say, our style is better, so we're just going to draw something over your art?
In the beginning, with the very ornate art that is so impressive, I mean, the figures can be 12 feet tall and reach 18 feet off the ceiling. They're monumental and they're impressive. And rarely did anybody who came after that do anything to damage them. It was though they were created by the ancients and we're going to revere them. But they did sometimes use them as a background. And it's almost comical because they will, you'll have a quote, shaman figure with a hollow body, and inside it'll be six little dancers. It won't have damaged the older painting, but it will have used it as a framing mechanism. But the later style also, there is a great deal of scraping off of paint pigment from a lot of these. And it isn't necessarily vandalism, because they would take this paint and mix it into their puberty ceremonies, into drinks and things to gain the power of the ancestor.
Wow. Thank you very much for sharing this with us. And as I say, it's right here in the Witte. If you want to go up to the second floor and see this great exhibit of the artwork that they have collected over the years, you're more than welcome to do that. Dr. Salve Turpin is the former director of the Borderlands Archaeological Research Unit at the University of Texas at Austin. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And as I say, you can go to our website and see a slideshow of the photo of the rock art until you get here to the Witte. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. We want to thank the folks at the Witte here, including Executive Director Marissa McDermott, and to our hosts at Texas Public Radio, Janet Grogene, Eliza Gonzalez, Albert Salazar, Fabian Gonzalez, and we want to thank you all for your warm Texas welcome and welcoming us to San Antonio. I think it's like the fifth time we've been here. We'll keep coming back to you, throw us out. And if you want to go to our website, it's sciencefriday.com. You can take along Science Friday with you on your iPhone and Android app. You continue our discussion on Twitter all week long at SciFry, at SCIFRI. You can join us on Facebook. And we'll see you next week in New York. I'm Ira Flatow in San Antonio.